Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. That's right. I'm Eric, and I am running the show this week because as we sat down to do today's show, we said, hey, do we have show notes? And Lou said, no, I don't think we have any show notes done yet. Hey, Eric, I vote you do the show tonight.
Hey, I may not be prepared, but I think quick. And
thanks.
I nominate people
Lou.
Very quickly.
Lou actually said, my give up.
I'll give you that. I mean, I got to give you props for that. You dug yourself out of
right.
that hole.
The thing is to me, because I've been watching videos of discussion, your Rubik's Cubes.
Since that discussion happened, we now have show notes.
Thanks to Tim. Yes, because after some smart aleck comments during the bonus content. Yeah, for more on the Rubik's Cube thing, see the bonus content. But anyway, we are here with another episode, and it was kind of a slow news week, but we did have a few things pop up at the last minute, and we have a really big discussion topic yet again. And I think this is another one of those discussion topics that a lot of people are going to feel very passionately about. It's not so much as directly controversial, perhaps, as the Benioff and Weiss hiring and some of the other things. But I think that this is something that's a big concern for a lot of fans. So we're going to talk about that later in the show. But first, how are you guys doing? Tim, I know you got nothing else going on right now. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks. How are you?
He says
everything's fine here.
Frantically editing the show notes. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, yeah, you just got off the hook for the responsibility for tonight's show. So if anything gets screwed up,
I can coast from this one now.
Pretty much. All right. Well, do either of you two subscribe to Entertainment Weekly?
You already know the answer to this. We have this.
I know, but none of the audience. Oh, okay, so this is how you work. You throw the topic out there to make it sound conversational. And then the other host is like, no, Eric, I don't subscribe. Do you? And then you answer, and then you somehow get around to the fact that this week's issue of Entertainment Weekly has a disappointingly brief segment on the Solo movie.
But it's got the whole cover, so it sucks you in,
right? The whole cover, yeah. So it's back in the days before the internet, back when I was a kid and back when Lou was in his mid-40s, we didn't have clickbait. Clickbait didn't exist. So it was, you know, they put this big thing on the front of the magazine to get you to buy it, and then it turns out there's two pages inside and most of its pictures, but there's some interesting
stuff.
That's
pretty much how Playboy was done. That's right. How they reeled you in.
Oh, boy. All right. So,
hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is
the family friendly Star Wars. Boy. All right. So we talked about the teaser trailer in the Super Bowl spot last week, but we have a little bit more information about the characters. So we talked about, obviously, we have Chewbacca and we have Han Solo. We talked about Kira, played by Emilia Clarke. Mm-hmm. And this is awesome in the magazine because they have this tiny little print that's white text on a red background. And I have like no lighting here at this desk. So this is going to be fun.
That's
so the quote here is, they grew up as comrades, Clarke says of Kira and Han. They grew up as pals, as partners in crime. Then there's obviously the romantic side of things. Within that relationship, Kira is an enigma. So
there's no romantic.
I
don't know what I mean, she just said.
Honestly, I'm a little disappointed if they go too heavy in the romantic aspect of this. Not because it bothers me to have romance in Star Wars, but it's like, I don't know. I guess maybe in this movie it'd be okay. There's so much else going on in Star Wars movies. And they're already
in this movie. I think it would work because we know his character.
Yeah.
You know, in the, what he's trying to do and kind of what his desires are and plans are. It'd be nice to see how that got set up. You know, maybe he was jilted by Kira. Maybe, you know.
Yeah. I guess it probably fits here. So this is one of those situations where it adds something to the story, probably. Whereas, like with the saga, yeah, who cares? Lando is in it, obviously. Probably don't need to talk much about him. Beckett, Woody Harrelson's character, Tobias Beckett. He's a powerful criminal, but a free agent, says Ron Howard. Tobias Beckett really shapes Han more than anybody, as Han comes to believe that in a lawless time, he needs a moral code. Val, played by Tandy Newton, probably the most shadowy figure in the heist crew. Quote, she's tied to Beckett. That's how Han meets Val, says Kathleen Kennedy. They've been partners a long time. Okay, so she's part of Beckett's crew. And then we have the droid, L3-37, which in the 90s leet speak would spell leet.
Yeah, so, I was just thinking what they would spell.
Yeah, what? Yeah,
it's not exciting.
No. No, well, it's kind of throwback-ish, right? You know, way, way back in the 90s, like before time. Phoebe Waller-Bridge plays the droid. Lando's sidekick is a self-modified droid, says screenwriter John Kasdan. A mutt, if you will, of various parts of different droids. She's improved upon herself as the years have gone by. So the shtick of this droid is basically, it's kind of created itself.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Skynet.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, they talk a little bit about it in the article. Apparently, it's a little more what we would consider socially sophisticated than C-3PO is. I mean, 3PO is a protocol droid, but it's less about protocol and more about, like, this droid can actually talk to people without scaring them off.
Right.
So there you go. Those are the characters that we saw in the teaser for those who wanted more information about them. Mm. Now,
there's more news on Solo.
There is. Tim, you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. So it's apparently been confirmed that George Lucas did, in fact, make an appearance on the set of Solo. Obviously, he and Ron Howard go back a couple of years. To say the least. And so I guess early on, they're even saying it may have been the first day of shooting that Ron Howard took over, that George Lucas and his wife had visited the set. And it was supposed to apparently have just been a brief visit. By the way, my reference here is an article from Bleeding Cool. So it was just supposed to be a brief visit. And apparently George ended up staying and hanging out for like 5 hours. And kind of, you know, bounced a few ideas back and forth with Howard, and even saying that Lucas got to direct a small part of a scene, which is kind of neat. It's you know, nostalgic for us to think that, you know, George actually had some input to a new movie and a hand in, hey, here's where the camera goes. And,
yeah,
but, you know, maybe, I mean, we're going to change this part line of a little scene, bit.
Back up for a minute, because the article starts out, the title is George Lucas directed part of Solo, a Star Wars story. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And then you read it further.
We have a lot of clickbait problems this week. This is the week of the really bad Star Wars clickbait.
Right. And I'm trying to find the exact quote, but it was something like, why don't you have Han do this? And that's all he did. That's all he said.
Yeah, that was the quote. Why doesn't Han just do this?
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and it very well could have been raise his left arm instead of his right arm. I mean,
that's
hardly
directing part of Solo or directing part of a scene, even. That's just, hey, try this instead. Oh, cool. I think it's awesome he was there. I think it's awesome that he was giving advice to Ron Howard, and I'm sure Ron was ecstatic with it.
Well, so Ron apparently said, yeah, that sounds great, and immediately went ahead with whatever George's change was. Kathleen Kennedy has said that it's kind of a really cool, funny scene, and apparently is one of the scenes on the Falcon. They're not going to tell us which, at least not yet. And it does sound like maybe, like the article, this came from, you were talking about it's from Bleeding Cool. A few other sites have posted as well, but it originated from Entertainment Weekly. Though I don't remember whether it was in this article I read or not. Honestly, the article was a little bland, and so I barely remember some of the specifics. And I'd read this part online first anyway. So it might have been in a separate interview they posted to the website or something. But Kathleen Kennedy said it was from one of the scenes of The Falcon. It was kind of this cute, humorous scene. And it's kind of implied that George might have actually got up and kind of said, okay, you know, you stand here, and when he comes in, you do this, and kind of laid it out. Directing, though, like,
right.
We don't really know that that's what happened. All these articles are, oh my gosh, George Lucas is directing a portion of the movie. Like, he's involved with the directing. And
so, yeah, well, it's
yeah.
Yeah, they've certainly taken it a little far or a lot far. But I mean, just to me, it's just cool to think that, yeah, George was on a set. And even if it was just something pretty small and maybe even insignificant, it's just cool to know that he was there and he
yeah.
did
oh,
that.
Oh, I agree.
And,
absolutely.
I agree, yeah.
You know, I mean, because his, you know, and I got to say, you know, of everything, I mean, I'm still the biggest fan of the original trilogy. And, you know, and that was George's vision. And I really liked some of the prequel stuff, and that was George's vision. And I'm not so much a fan of the sequels, which, you know, largely a lot of the story is not right. George's vision. You know, and he wasn't there on set, as far as we know, providing any input to things. So I just think it's cool that he was there. And for as much as he's often said that he has disconnected himself from the franchise, that, you know, he did take a step back onto mm-hmm. a set, and he is asked after premieres of movies, you know, hey, what did you think of this new Star Wars film? And I mean, obviously things still gravitate toward him to some extent.
Yeah. Oh, he's always going to like be, that. You know, synonymous yeah. with the word Star Wars or with the word Star Wars. It's just yeah. that, you know, I think in a perfect world, and we may have even talked about this a while ago, you know, I think I'd like to have him still involved with the story group or with the actual story of these and being so involved on set. Maybe not directing, but, you know, kind of guiding and letting the director or somebody who can yeah. direct actors really well get the performances out of the actors we want to see.
Right. And that mm-hmm. is a skill that Ron Howard is known right. for. He is right. an actor's director. But, I mean, you really yeah. hit on the point there, Lou. Putting George Lucas in the story group, if he were ever willing to do that, is exactly the perfect spot for him. We talk all the time about Pablo yeah. Hidalgo being a canon expert and Leland Chi, the holocron keeper and all that. But the one thing, George Lucas has got every little tiny piece of minutiae yep. memorized about Star Wars. There's nothing about the world, the galaxy of Star Wars, that he does not have a vision for in his head. Not a single thing. So you're talking about Star Wars trivia and stuff. I mean, this is a guy who has every single little nuance mapped out in his brain. You get directors out there sometimes who are like, well, what about this little thing? That doesn't matter. That's not part of the story. Don't worry about it. No, you ask George Lucas why that guy standing in the background there behind all the aliens, he has this right. little scuff mark on his jacket. How did he get the scuff mark on his jacket? Oh, well, that was back at the Battle of Deneb when this freighter came down and this and that and this and that. He has all of this in his head. He has created this galaxy. And say yeah. what you will about his directing style, we all have the actors in the films have. Okay. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. a secret. And say what you will about how he laid out some of the story across the prequels and should it maybe have been divvied up and evened out a little bit for pacing, but he's a brilliant editor and he's a brilliant storyteller. It just, the concepts for this stuff. And it would really be nice to see him back in the story group. I know we've gone over it before. The story group does not come up with the stories,
right?
But they are the people who keep everybody who do come up with the stories in check.
If there's a guy that can tie it all together and make everything work well, it's him.
Yeah. Right. And it sounds like exactly what he did. Like, he gets who Han Solo is. And to say, well, why right. doesn't Han just do this? Like, that, I'm glad that Ron Howard is a smart enough guy and a humble enough guy too. He's not one of these notoriously arrogant directors, Michael Bay. So I'm glad that he had the common sense to let George make a decision like that. That's good. I mean, and it speaks well yeah. for the movie too. It, it, it reminds us how level-headed a director Ron Howard is when it comes to decision-making.
And, and I hope that George had a good enough time doing that, visiting the set and enjoying himself there, that we may see him kind of filter back into the community again.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I hope people understand that for the complaints that we have made about some nitpicky particular things, we are still fans of George Lucas, and we do still want him to have some involvement in the films. And if we talk about not wanting him to direct, does not mean we don't want him involved. And I like the sequels, and I like the direction that Lucasfilm is going right now. And I've said that before, but it's not that I have anything against George Lucas. I hope people understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on, Mark Hamill has weighed in on some of the criticism against Alden Ehrenreich. Now, I said that Ehrenreich was the least impressive part of the trailer and the TV spot to me, though I'm willing to give him a chance to see how he does in the film. I'm reserving judgment, but apparently the internet has not reserved judgment. Big surprise.
What?
I know, right?
Come on.
Right?
Social media is the kindest group of people you will ever find.
You would have
always wait till the whole story's out.
Yeah.
Not reactionary.
They're well informed.
I have not looked at social media on this stuff. I'm at the point now where if something gets announced, the first thing I do is I run to my computer and I shut down every window that's connected to the internet just in case. So sick of the hatred and everything. But have you guys seen anything? Like, are you aware? Has there been a lot of bashing? I'm inferring that there has been.
I mean, really, just in terms of a lot of people can't get over the fact that Alden Ehrenreich doesn't really particularly look like Harrison Ford. They can't make that disconnect in their head that, okay, we're doing a younger Han Solo, and yeah, it's a different actor, and kind of by necessity, they have to, you know, bring in another actor to do it. And I think also some of that criticism is picking up on the fact that, like you said, Eric, that people weren't really impressed with what they saw in the teaser and the TV spot, but that's just simply, you know, how they were cut. Obviously, the film is titled Solo. I think we're going to see a lot of Solo in the movie. And, you know, they're probably waiting to reveal more of that in a trailer that's going to come out and obviously in the film. So, but you know, the internet is not known for being patient. And so there have been some criticisms.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Hamill, who has taken some heat recently, obviously with some things with The Last Jedi, not only things directed at him, but things directed more broadly at the movie. In an interview with Entertainment Tonight, kind of stepped up into this and said, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can, you know, catch the article for yourselves, but he essentially said, hey, you know, you can't keep all the people happy all the time. And there's certain people that are going to have particular preferences. Some people aren't going to like certain things. Other people aren't going to like other things. You know, if you're not going to like it, don't watch it.
Yeah.
You know, but by God, just stop chronically complaining about it, because it's just this constant negative spin in that the world doesn't need.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I recorded an episode of Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast right after we did The Last Echo Base. I don't think I'm going to release it because I think that I want to wait and have Shannon and Andrea, maybe Lizzie, on an episode of Getting Sidetracked so we can kind of talk about some of that movie industry stuff overall. But I don't know. Maybe I'll chop it up and release part of it. I just, the hatred and stuff on the internet, people need to understand one simple thing about Star Wars going forward. It's going to change. It has changed. It's going to keep changing. And whatever your vision of it is, you're upset because Star Wars didn't turn out the way you wanted it to be. The Last Jedi, The Force Awakens, this Han Solo movie, whatever it is you're thinking of, it was announced. You started thinking about it. It got hyped up. You set expectations. You had a vision in your head of what it should be like, and then it wasn't. So even if Kathleen Kennedy showed up at your doorstep and said, here's what we're thinking. Why don't you take this? You don't have to come up with all the concepts, but just shape it into what you want your vision of Star Wars to be. And you made that. Everybody on the internet would still be complaining because your vision is not the same as the person sitting next to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if they get their vision of Star Wars, you're going to hate it because it's their perfect vision and it has nothing to do with your perfect vision. Everybody right. has taken such ownership now. We talked about this previously. Owning your fandom and owning your emotions about Star Wars is fine. Owning the material is not. You don't own it. It's not your vision. It's Lucasfilm's vision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Enjoy the vision that they're presenting to you. And if you don't enjoy it, that's okay too. But step away. I love the first Matrix movie. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I don't hate the second and third nearly as much as everybody else does. But I'm not a big fan of it, especially not the second one. But it doesn't diminish my enjoyment of the first. And I don't walk around all day bashing the second and third one. I enjoy the first one for what it was. If you don't like the sequel trilogy, that's fine. Enjoy Rogue One. Enjoy Han Solo. Enjoy the Boba Fett movie when it comes out. Enjoy what
enjoy
you can.
Enjoy the Thrawn trilogy when
the
that Thrawn comes out.
Trilogy, the inevitable Thrawn trilogy.
Yeah,
enjoy just, what you're able to and let go of the stuff you don't like because it's okay, but my gosh, don't bash the people that do like it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and there's one thing for liking what you like and not liking something else, but there's a whole different side of things that gets kind of ugly and dark when you start putting everybody down for what they want and it wasn't what you wanted.
Right.
I mean, Star Wars doesn't owe you anything, it doesn't owe me anything.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and I have to understand that. I mean, I've said it before. I don't like, well, I should say, I didn't like the story for The Phantom Menace. I didn't want that story. It's what we got, so I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's not what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just kind of picking up off a line you said in terms of people being owed things, it ticks me off when I actually see that language used in social media saying, oh, you know, the fans are owed this or the fans are entitled to this. They're not owed or entitled to anything. The relationship between Lucasfilm and the fans fundamentally is the fans giving Lucasfilm money. That is the relationship. Lucasfilm puts out things that most people like most of the time and people give them money.
Now, even if you put an artistic spin on that concept, Tim, the artistic side of it is still the same thing. They are providing you a piece of art. You interpret it how you want to interpret it. You feel whatever you want to feel, and you get out of that art whatever you want to get out of that art. But you don't get to create that art for them. So whether you want to look at it from the business side or the artistic side, Tim, it's that same thing.
Sure. Oh, yeah. There's still an economy to it, whether it's a dollar-based economy or an economy of more
abstract,
loosely
sort of
defined, abstract things. And the thing is, if you can still be critical of things. I mean, hey, that's what we do on this podcast is criticism, but it's not necessarily a negative criticism. Sometimes
it's critique.
And that's, we try to keep it positive. We try to keep it fair. We will critique things that we like. We'll critique things that we don't like Ant-Man. And there are things that we really like that we will also critique because, you know, there's always, you know, even if you love something, there's always a little aspect of it that you say, oh gosh, you know, maybe we're going to analyze that. And maybe there's a little piece of that, in my opinion, could have been improved upon, but Lou's going to say, no, I liked it. It was perfect. And Eric's going to say, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. Cause I walked away from the mic during the bonus content. So
shameless plug there.
We can go on for hours about this, but we're just going to spin around and around. We've said so much of it so many times before.
Yeah. I do want to remind people once again, though, that when we do analysis of this stuff, we do it lovingly. I love my mom. One of the most important people in my life. She can really annoy me sometimes. But I love my mom. Star Wars is the same thing. We love Star Wars. We dedicate so much energy into doing a podcast and going to conventions and et cetera, et cetera. We're into this. We're invested and we're happy that we've invested it. So don't take things that we say the wrong way. But as for the community, just it's on both sides. Don't hate on the people who didn't like the movie. they have that right. If you didn't like it, don't bash the people who did for being stupid. They're not stupid. They saw different things in it than you did, and that's their right. Let's unify the community. Okay? That's all I'm saying.
Good luck with that.
But you know what?
Not to be a cynic.
You're right. But
it's just what it we starts saw with in, who,
the
in
person
the
listening right now. The person listening to this show right now, it starts with them.
True.
Every
you're,
single
oh, you're
one
100%
of you.
Right.
Spill it over into your friends. Spill it over into other podcast communities. I know many of you listen to several Star Wars podcasts, and there's Twitter, there's web forums, there's other Slack and Discord communities. Mm-hmm. You can change the people around you. You can't change everybody, but it's an exponential growth. You change them, they change people, they change people. Be part of the solution, not the problem.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, it's fine to have a little bit of cynicism or a little bit of sarcasm, but that can also get taken too far into just this horrible hive of negativity. And,
yeah,
you know, we don't need to go there. I mean, we're being negative about negativity, and I certainly appreciate the irony of that. But if there's anything to be negative about, it is that. And you're right. We all can do better, and we just have to be more cognizant of
right.
of how we express ourselves and who we express ourselves to.
Let's unify. There's the positive spin on it. We're going to unify.
Just like North and South Korea.
No politics, Lou.
Sorry.
We did say we were kind of sick of the Star Wars community. We were going to move on to something less drama-filled, and we're
going
to start covering politics.
I was
going
for the Olympics part of that, though.
Yeah, they unified into a hockey team that, well... we'll just say isn't all that unified.
No. Okay.
The only thing I've watched so far is... it doesn't matter what country they're from because they're not functioning.
Hey, quick shout out. The only thing I've been watching so far has been the Canadian curling team. Go Canada. They're kicking serious butt. Awesome. Anyway, Lucasfilm apparently has clarified why the Solo directors were actually fired. Which of you read the article? I'll let you cover it.
Well, I did. Lou?
Okay.
No, I didn't see his one.
Okay. I was going to spin it to Lou because he hasn't gotten that. Well, I mean, he hasn't covered the news
this week.
Yet,
so, hey.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true.
So this was more, this actually kind of leans a little bit back more to Entertainment Weekly. And this is something I don't know if this was in the edition that Eric has or not,
no,
but it was posted
I don't think
up
was
on
there.
Their website. Just talking to Kathleen Kennedy about some things that, you know, Solo related. And her quote to Entertainment Weekly, which was pretty PC. It was kind of one of those things that, like, they were so good at something that we couldn't have them do this anymore. She says, "I think these guys are hilarious, but they come from a background of animation and sketch comedy. And when you're making these movies... you can do that, and there's plenty of room for improvisation. We do it all the time, but it has to be inside of a highly structured process, or you can't get the work done, and you can't move the armies of people to anticipate and have things ready. So it literally came down to process and just getting it done." So obviously her implication here is that they were behind schedule on things, and she's right. It really does come down to moving armies, because as you're working on one set, as you're actively filming on one set, at least one other set is being prepped for filming, if not more. And you have schedules of actors, and you have crew schedules and that kind of stuff. And all this stuff has to kind of line up. And if you're doing too many takes, if you're doing, you know, too much improv, you're just kind of bogging these things down. And I think that's a lot of where she was going. And she was actually, I think, pretty gracious about her remark.
Well, I mean, she has to be. She can't just all out, you know, slam these guys. But I have to question one thing about this quote. You know, she says there's plenty of room for improvisation, but it has to be inside of a highly structured process.
Which is an improv.
That doesn't really work for improvisation,
wait a minute.
Does it?
Yeah, so here's, I feel like I see what she's talking about. There are certain directors for whom you have to read exactly what's on the page. George Lucas himself was one of those directors. JMS, Joe Michael Straczynski, the guy who did Babylon 5, you had to read what was on the page. And fortunately, he's a brilliant screenwriter. But other directors, Tim Miller from Deadpool, There was a lot of improv there, but they would sit and do take after take after take and get a lot of improv. There were other Irvin Kershner on Empire Strikes Back, he allowed for a little bit of improv, but he still had a very structured environment. So if you wanted to say, we do one more take where we say this instead, that's okay. But I think she's talking about the type of directing, especially for the type of comedy where it's like, okay, let's do, we'll do another 10 or 15 takes just to see, just go with it, say what you feel, let's go. And that's where like a lot of these comedies and stuff, you get these blooper reels and outtakes where there's like 17 different variations on a joke from a scene, because some of the actors are so good with comedy and improv that that's better than sticking with the script. But this isn't a comedy. Yeah. This, you really need the script to go in certain directions. And you're talking about characters who have, I mean, Han Solo, we were talking earlier, there's a feel to Han Solo. Han Solo feels a certain way. If you don't capture that, you got a really funny joke, but you didn't get the persona of Han. You didn't get that character. Yeah. So I think that some improv would have been okay within certain parameters, but I think, again, the style of sketch comedy and such that these guys come from was probably never really a good fit for this movie in the first place. And I have to say, I don't fault these guys that much for two reasons. Number one, I think that there should have been more communication back and forth between them and Lucasfilm at the beginning. To set expectations for what Lucasfilm expected of them, and that's Lucasfilm's fault because they're the boss. It's always
they should have gotten regular feedback.
And then number two, to find out so late in the process that things weren't going the way you wanted, I think that that's again Lucasfilm's fault. They should have been a little bit more aware of things earlier on.
Yeah, in tune with what's going on.
So I don't fault these guys. And I honestly don't think that Kathleen Kennedy was necessarily sugarcoating it a whole lot. I'm sure she was pissed at the time. But looking at it objectively, I kind of feel like she probably realizes where things went wrong and they were just the wrong guys for the job in the first place. I think that it's probably okay.
Yeah. And you know, it's better to find this out now. Stop it. Correct it. No matter how long the delay took or how short the process is before we get this going again.
Yeah.
But put out a good film. Don't put out something that we were kind of going, oh man, I hope this works, and then have it flop horribly and have the fans rebel against them even worse than they already are.
Right.
This is the right thing to do. Like you guys said, it happened too late in the process.
Yeah.
Well, doing that style of, improv and such, it also depends on who your actors are. I mean, some people are not as naturally funny.
Yep.
Some people are not that quick-witted to be able to drop, improv line after improv line continuously. And it's not only the individual actors, but it's also the people who they're working with, where they need to be able to riff off of each other and kind of extend that scene and make that scene flow as an improv scene. Because improving a line is one thing, and you might have some success with that. That's fine. But
I mean,
through a scene is completely different. I mean, everyone needs to be synced up. I mean, it's we've all watched improv shows, and it's like, you gotta be of that same mind. And it's not about, and you hear this continually from improv comedians, that it's not about you, it's about setting up the other person.
Right.
And I think a lot of actors, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, but a lot of actors are very selfish. They're thinking about how they are going to do their line. They're not thinking about how the other person is going to deliver their line. They're not looking to set them up, but that's what improv is about.
Mm. Well, and I think if you look at this, Emilia Clarke is a very skilled actress, in my opinion, but still young in the sense that she hasn't done a lot of stuff yet. Alden Ehrenreich is very young. I mean, he did Hail Caesar and I think one other thing, and that's it.
The
flip side of it, you've got Donald Glover, who is hilarious. I mean, if you've ever seen Community, especially any of the outtakes from it, I mean, that is your improv guy right there on the set.
Oh yeah.
He could, he could deliver anything to anybody. And then Harrelson, I think Harrelson would be really good for that too. So you've got two really strong people, and then two people who have never really worked in that type of environment before.
Yeah.
I think that that's part of the thing too. You don't really have the actors in the roles that you need them for to carry this movie through. Donald mm-hmm. Glover, absolutely. But then he's playing off of Alden Ehrenreich. I don't think it's a tennis match. You're hitting the ball back and forth and back and forth.
Exactly.
I think it would be too one-sided there.
And I think that Ehrenreich probably had a little bit of exposure to it in Hail Caesar. I mean, if you guys saw the film, it's the whole film is a spoof of movie production.
Right. And, to be fair, I did not see it, so I can't.
Yeah, I think he probably would have had some experience, but that's experience on one film. And again, he's young. He doesn't have, I mean, unless he has a particular natural talent for that, he hasn't had a lot of opportunity to soak that in and practice it and hone the skill.
Did he have a big role in that movie, though?
It actually wasn't all that big. It's interestingly enough, he was kidnapped.
Okay, and, so again, the experience level that he
was absent for a big part of the film. And his character is kind of funny and quirky, but he really wasn't all that prominent in it. And to be honest, I ended up watching the film soon after it was announced that he was going to be starring in Solo. That's really the only reason why I watched the film. And it was okay. It wasn't great.
Okay.
You know, before we move on, the one thing that kind of struck me as strange, and we're reading through some of these articles as we've been recording, the article about Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill's take on Ehrenreich playing Solo, there's a line in here that Ehrenreich says, it looks like it's a quote from him. It says, Ehrenreich himself hinted that Solo will have a certain darkness to it, mm-hmm. in addition to being an all-out comedy. What? Wait, whoa, huh? An all-out comedy? That's the first I've heard that anywhere.
There have been a lot of dark comedies, though.
Yeah, but calling the movie an all-out comedy,
And I'm almost guessing that might have been a quote from Ehrenreich early on.
Before
the director change. When the tone that he got from, the feeling that he got from the set was, everything is funny all the time.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. so, too.
That's really my only guess. And I'm hoping that Ron Howard was able to subdue that a little bit. I mean, I'm okay
with... Yeah, it blended into the movie we want to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm okay with something with, you know, Han Solo and Lando Calrissian being a little funny and a little quippy, because that's kind of that's those characters. They have that bit of sarcasm, and they have that interplay. But there's still also a serious tone to things. And we always saw that from... particularly from their interactions in Empire. So I'm really hoping that Ron Howard was able to adjust that.
So back to the Entertainment Weekly article, not the stuff from the website, but the stuff that's in the actual magazine. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit about that darker tone in there, not so much in the sense that they call it dark in the article, but they talk about some of the internal struggle that Han has as a character and kind of feeling like, he's not where he needs to be. Like, he feels he's not where he needs to be yet. And he's kind of trying to put on this persona of confidence, and yet he doesn't necessarily really feel it himself. So the dark side of things there, I can get that. And I think Ron Howard, again, he's so good at getting performances out of actors, and he is so in tune with how people interact with one another and how they feel about things and stuff. He's very much an actor's director. I think the humor in this is going to work really well. What humor there is, and there will be some, like you said, Tim, but I think it's going to work out okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I have confidence in it.
So next up, we have some exciting news. Some exciting Star Wars news. Okay. So episode 9 is going to start filming this summer.
Yay.
That's
exciting news.
That's your exciting news. Again with the clickbait. This this was so frustrating. Tim, you put this article in the Discord channel, and it said, you know, exciting news about episode 9, and and it had a little blurb under it. It's going to start filming this summer. I'm like, well, yeah, obviously. And so I clicked through. The fourth time I reread this ad-ridden article, I realized that it was just clickbait, that that was the quote exciting news. Yeah. So for those who didn't know, and couldn't have figured it out on your own based on the time frames of the releases and et cetera, yeah. Episode 9 is going to start filming this summer. It's currently in pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the bigger news, the more important news,
that wasn't in this article, was it?
It was.
I think it was.
It was a briefly mentioned line.
It was like one little line that just squeaked in
four times.
It was the
See,
more
talk about burying
piece.
The lead. Then that was the that should have been the headline.
Yes.
If I read the article four times and didn't pick up on it, they did something wrong. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. The more important thing here is that this episode 9 was slated to be released in May of 2019. And that is being pushed to the ubiquitous Christmas 2019.
Good.
So
anybody who likes them coming out around Christmas time, this is great news.
Which is for me, I actually love them coming out Christmas time.
Yeah. Well, but it's a big question, which, I mean, a lot of our generation, they're like, no, it's got to be, you know, May, Memorial Day, blah, blah, blah.
No, I'm happy with
what camp are you guys in?
Huh? I'm Christmas all the way.
I'm a Christmas, yeah.
I am too.
I'm good with December.
I was pretty happy with the last three, and I was glad the last one got moved. And yeah, I'm happy with it. I mean, I wish it was this Christmas.
Well, yeah. So that does bring up another thing. Because of Solo being released in May, we are going, instead of having about a 12-month wait between films, we're having a 5-month wait. And then a didn't know there was going to be math in this podcast amount of wait. So, you know, like a year and a half. So,
well, the good news is that
which
primes
him
for a celebration in the U.S. in April of 19.
I have to say this about celebration conventions, though. It's a little bit different when you get the convention 4 weeks before the movie release.
Yeah.
So, having celebration in April and then the movie comes out in May. That is actually a really cool thing. You don't have to worry about, well, what are they going to show? Are we going to get a trailer for blah, blah, blah? No, you're going to get like the first, 9 minutes of footage from episode 3 that we got at Celebration 3 back in 2005. That was a big deal. That was awesome.
Sure.
We had probably, well, at this point, it's been 10 years or more. I think we could talk about the fact that the General Grievous lightsaber battle, or at least a large portion of it, got leaked.
Wow.
And that was a bit, I mean, I'm sitting there watching in someone's hotel room on their laptop, but that was, I mean, that was kind of a big deal too. So you're getting stuff from the movie that's about to hit, and they're actively doing all the press promotion stuff for the movie anyway. Mm-hmm. You're not, oh, hey, so-and-so couldn't be with us cause they're out doing reshoots and blah, blah, blah. But here's a nice poster. Like, and nothing against the, posters aren't my thing, but nothing against the posters. There's something different when it's like right around the corner as opposed to later in the year. So I will say this, I'm all for the Christmas release, but the celebration aspect of it is the one downside, in my opinion.
Okay. I can see it from that point of view.
Yeah. I think the December release is fun. I like the timing of it in the year. I like the fact that, merchandising pushes around then, which I think just makes sense for the studio to be doing that, the big merchandising push for the holidays. And it works for me. I'm totally okay with it. Some people say, no, there's already enough craziness with Christmas and Hanukkah and everything else. And it's a hassle for them to go see a movie. I get that too. And I respect that. My preference though is I like it in December.
With the exception of this year, I've gone out on Christmas Day to see the previous two Star Wars movies, and I thought that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was a second viewing, but I liked that. And, kids are off of school for the holiday break. Families are generally together, and a lot of people go see Star Wars as a family, in addition to going to see with their friends. And I think like a couple of weeks before the big the big holiday period. I think that works out really well. When you start getting into late May, school is or is not in session in certain areas still, and then people are going away for the summer, or people are starting their summer jobs, or yeah, it kind of frees stuff up for the summer, but people are going off in so many different directions that it's a little bit different sort of environment. I don't know. Yeah. I like the winter better.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's arguments for and against. And I think it really comes down to a preference.
Yeah.
And our preference is the preference. And, you know, yeah, ours is the correct side.
Yeah. Ours is the correct side. Just want to point that out in case anybody's looking to find out what the correct side is.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into the big discussion, because I know we're already at 45 minutes and we're probably going to have a long talk about this. One last piece in here. And I saw the headline for this, but I didn't read the link. So somebody else is going to take this one. Tim, you want to take it?
I can. So it was recently announced that the Last Jedi comic adaptation is going to be written by Gary Whitta. The cool thing about this is that this kind of really builds a heck of a resume for Gary Whitta. If you don't recall, he wrote a good portion of the screenplay for Rogue One. He has written episodes of Star Wars Rebels, and he's also been a contributor to a Star Wars book. So between those and now doing a comic, he's really kind of covered like all these bases of all these different medium out there for Star Wars. So it's kind of a nice benchmark for him. I like the stuff that he does personally. So that's really it. I don't know that there's a lot to talk about there, but it's just kind of a cool mention, along with the fact that the first issue of this 6-issue series for the Last Jedi comic adaptation is going to be coming out on May 2nd. So it does say that it will be adding some scenes and telling others from a new perspective. So it is not just a full retelling of the movie, page for page or scene for scene. It should be worth picking up and taking a look at.
Cool. All right. We have, let's see, The Force Awakens. Then we had Rogue One. Then we had The Last Jedi. Amongst all of those, we are now on season 4 of Rebels, which is wrapping up Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
We have Forces of Destiny isn't a full-fledged show, but we have that, but I'm not sure that that really counts toward this particular topic, so I'll let that one go. We've got Solo coming out 5 months after The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. We've got Episode 9 coming. They haven't made Kenobi official yet, have they? You guys can probably hear my dog playing with a dog toy.
I don't think so, no.
Great timing. Okay.
As far as I know, it is not official.
There is at least one still yet to be announced anthology film that's confirmed to be in the works.
Don't forget the Thrawn trilogy.
There's Thrawn trilogy, very important.
The so-called Thrawn trilogy.
As branded by the Echo Base podcast.
The yet to be described Rian Johnson trilogy. There is the series of films by Benioff and Weiss. There are multiple television series that are coming to the upcoming Disney streaming channel.
Mm-hmm.
The implication I'm reading into this, and I know this isn't going to be accurate or anything, but I'm reading that to be at least 3.
Okay.
I think if it were just 2, they would have said a couple, or they would have said, yeah, we've got not just 1, but 2 series coming. For them to say several, I interpret several as meaning more than 2.
Sure. That's okay. Reasonable. We have books, we have comic books, we have Lego Freemaker.
Yeah, I only just listed the video content. We have Lego Freemaker still coming, and then there's all of the books and comic books. Now, there's always been a good amount of books and comic books that have been in regular rotation, but all of this video content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this discussion is really about the movies in the television shows.
Yeah, mostly, are we hitting oversaturation? And at what point, if not now, at what point does it become oversaturation?
Well, I don't think we've hit it now. I mean, it feels like we're just getting started with this new Star Wars, you know, since Disney's owned it. I mean, we just talked about this on Random Chatter last night. We had the class photo of the 10-year history of the MCU in Marvel. And that feels like, wow, it's been around for 10 years. And it doesn't feel like it's getting old.
No.
And it doesn't feel like we're getting oversaturated. There's a lot of movies coming out, but hey, I got my tickets for Thursday night Black Panther already. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I don't.
And for the MCU, yeah, there's a lot of movies. There's a lot of network TV shows. There's streaming shows. There's animated shows. There's all that stuff. And it doesn't really feel like an oversaturation. And I the great thing that I like about the MCU, and I think what they're doing, at least what I'm expecting very similar that they're doing and that they're going to be doing with Star Wars content, is that the movies are the anchor for it. And the TV shows and animation and all that stuff, if you want to get into it, that's cool. And that will contribute to your experience, but they're not necessary. It's just like the books have always been for Star Wars. They help expand that universe. They help with that world building and with character development. But you don't have to have read a book to better enjoy a movie. It can contribute to it, but it's not a necessary thing. And, you know, I think we have that ability to pick and choose. And, you know, so of everything that's out there right now for Star Wars, you know, yeah, I've watched a few episodes of Lego Freemaker. Do I watch it religiously? No, I don't. I think it's a pretty good series, but I don't watch it all the time. Have I watched all the Forces of Destiny? I haven't. I've watched some of them. I like them. I think they're really good.
Now, you're talking animation projects, but keep in mind at least one of the TV series for Star Wars will be live action.
Sure.
And while it doesn't negate your point, I want to make that clear. I think a lot of the fans will look at a live action series differently than they look at animated projects.
Say yeah, what you will, it's easier to dismiss enough. Animation.
Yeah. Animation. I mean, the Star Wars stuff has been, I think, pretty not mature in a mature sense, but like, I think it's been pretty well written. It's grown up. Like it's good, solid content that should be respected. But people are going to look at live action as, oh, this is the real stuff.
Well, and at least in regard to Rebels the Clone Wars, it is canonical to the Star Wars universe. Yeah. So it definitely is important.
But again, but talking about mainstream audiences.
You have to enjoy, exactly. For the mainstream audience, no, it's not.
My cousin will never check out Rebels, but they might get into a live action Star Wars TV series because they're going to say, oh, well, that show, that's a grown up star. That's not like a kid's cartoon thing.
This is the X-Wing live action series, right?
One can hope. So, you know, back to the Marvel thing, let's talk about that a little bit. That's there was an article here in the show notes. And I think that, you know, there's more to the oversaturation discussion than just that, but let's take a look at how has Marvel made the MCU not become oversaturated. And keep in mind, that includes television series. We've got even more now than we did before. It used to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now we've also got the Defender series.
Cloak and Dagger.
Netflix, you know, Daredevil and et cetera. Cloak and Dagger. Yep. Though I'm not sure. Some of these aren't owned by Marvel Studios. Gifted is Fox. That's right. A mutant show. The one on Hulu, Runaways.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure who owns that, but regardless of who owns it, it's still out there. It's still Marvel content. Yeah.
There's still a lot of content, and it's Marvel related.
And it's successful. You know, Runaways is doing really well. I think it's a little more teenagerish feel to it. The Gifted, I think, is more grown up. That's doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
All of the Netflix stuff, save Iron Fist, is doing really well.
Iron Fist was good. I liked it.
I don't mind Iron Fist, but it was not well received.
Was infinitely better than Ant-Man.
Oh my gosh. How do really? I... Now, they changed the Skype interface. How do I mute just Tim? Let me see. So how does Marvel keep it from becoming oversaturated? What do they do?
I think they've done a couple of things really, really well. And one of them is good stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, they're doing good writing, good stories, different stories. It's not all the same stuff. And they're also targeting for different demographics.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, Runaways is more of a kids type show. The Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff on screen is more of a, you know, all audiences. And you can skip stuff without feeling like, oh man, I gotta watch that before I see his next movie. Yep. Like, I am way behind on the Marvel Netflix stuff, but it doesn't impact me going to see Black Panther this weekend, so I'm still gonna go see it.
Right.
Well, let's look at Star Wars then. You can't see Episode 8 without having seen Episode 7. Rogue One would not be as good if you didn't at least have the context of A New Hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, I'm not talking about skipping a movie, but I can skip a TV series, for example.
Well, sure, and not, sure. And but not even the Marvel movies, though, you can watch Ant-Man by itself. You can watch Black Panther by itself. Now, the Avengers movies, maybe you need a little bit right. more context, but even those, I think you could probably watch by themselves. Iron Man, those movies are pretty much by themselves. So Marvel really is doing a lot of
themselves.
What's that?
I said they do all build on themselves, and some of them are more dependent upon each other than I think you're getting at. I mean, definitely the Avengers stuff, definitely the, you know, Civil War leading into right. you know, the Captain America stuff. I mean, those are all pretty much intertwined. You can see some of them by themselves, but not all of them.
But the ones centered around the individual characters, you can mm-hmm. pretty much, I mean, Doctor Strange, you can watch by itself. Thor, you can watch by itself. So I think that you do have the ensemble movies, but it's been built up more around the individual characters first. And then the ensemble movies are more of the, like a special event sort of thing. And that's one of the criticisms people have had about the DC movies, other than all the Zack Snyder stuff, is that a lot of people have said DC should have made movies focusing on the individual characters and then made us fall in love with them first and then bring them together instead of trying to do it the other way around. Star Wars, we're seeing the anthology movies now. We've got Rogue One. We've got Solo. We expect Kenobi. We expect maybe a Boba Fett movie because it was originally going to have happened. Those, I think, that's kind of along the lines of what they were doing with the MCU. But when you look at the saga, there's still that saga. And a lot of people have said in our Discord community, you know, after Episode 9 comes out, I kind of want a break. Maybe we can wait a little while before we get to the next trilogy or, you know, episode 10 or whatever. So does it need to be that maybe we get more of the anthology movies? Because right now we've got a series coming up and a trilogy coming up. And those are going to, at least within themselves, be part of a bigger thing. And then are we getting the series and the other trilogy concurrently? Are we going to alternate every year back and forth between the two? Or are the Benioff and Wise things like 8 or 9 years down the road?
Mm. It's certainly going to take them a few years at least.
Right.
Yeah. They've got to create whatever subworld they're creating. Mm-hmm. Then they have to break the story down into how many movies they're doing. And then they've got to get screenwriters and directors and et cetera. So yeah, we're looking a few years out for that.
Yeah, the difference between what Marvel has done and what Disney or what Lucasfilm is doing is, you know, Marvel is based on characters from, what, 50 years worth of comics, right?
Yeah.
And they can tailor to whatever they want to, and they don't have to be beholden to, you know, the Holy Trilogy that we had back in the beginnings of Star Wars that we are all still very much tied to with all these movies going forward because they're all based off that same world that Lucas created.
Yeah.
As we get into the stuff, you know, like this new non-connected trilogy that Rian Johnson wants to do and the new stuff that we heard about last week with the new directors, those may be going into a different direction to make them more standalone and less dependent upon that world. You know,
right.
whereas, you know, a Black Panther movie may not be totally connected to the rest of the MCU in ways that we see right now, mm-hmm. but it's in that same feeling, that same atmosphere. Whereas, you know, Solo is going to be based on a character we know from the original trilogy and is very much rooted in that trilogy. And like you said, Rogue One, same thing. If you didn't see A New Hope, it's going to seem a little weird without that knowledge.
You know, the source material for Marvel Comics, when you think about it, you just kind of pointed out that the source material for the Star Wars films, it's very much about the mythology. And Marvel source material is very much about the characters. we might be getting two Marvel films a year, but we're not getting two Captain America movies a year. We're not getting two right. Thor movies a year. We're getting one Thor movie every 4 years. We're yeah. getting one Doctor Strange movie every 3 or 4 years. And then he'll also make an appearance in something else maybe. But is that maybe why it's easier to tolerate the saturation level of the Marvel universe? Is because it's not so much about, hey, there's this one big important thing going on in the universe and we're going to give you all these different perspectives of it. Instead, it's a character-centric movie and there are 500 different potential characters. Whereas Star Wars, it's about, so far, it's about a saga. And even Rogue One is still about an event in the saga. Yeah. And even Han Solo is about events that fit into the saga. Is that maybe why it's a danger?
The MCU is also, and I think.
But is it about that?
Well, I think that the character focused films within the MCU, when you're watching the film itself, unless it's a film that's a, you know, like a monumental event, particularly the Avengers tagged movies, that kind of stuff. They, in the moment, it almost seems like a standalone film because a lot of them really could be on their own without anything else.
Right.
But then when you take a step back, you see those connections and it kind of builds itself. I think that Star Wars will do well to have some of that variety that does kind of venture off the path of the saga. And I think that, oh, I had a great thought on this and it completely left my mind.
Well, while you're thinking of it, let me respond to what you just said. Couldn't you argue that the feeling you get there in the moment about the fact that it's just that film at that moment that matters, that's the point. Like that being yes. in the moment in that film, that's what matters. Because again, look at The Last Jedi. A lot of people walked out. Chris commented that it didn't do anything to change episode 7 for him.
Right.
Now, I have opinions on whether it should have or not, but I know a lot of people agree with him and were looking for that sort of thing. They're seeing it as this is part 2 of a 3-part story, and it's not about just that film, just that minute. And even the events of the film were about those same characters flying away from the base they just blew up.
Right.
So what you're saying about, yeah, if you zoom out, like, look at the Marvel film in the greater context, yeah, you can see how they all tie together. But when you're sitting there watching that one film, when you're watching Doctor Strange, you're not thinking about Captain America.
Right.
When you're watching Doctor Strange, you're not thinking about the Hulk. You're thinking about Doctor Strange and that particular environment, that particular character, those particular villains, those particular powers yeah. that the characters have. And
it's,
that
it's
is the entirety of that
versus
world.
A micro level type mm-hmm. of right. thing. Mm-hmm. So the other idea that I had, I think is also a reflection of the fandom as well. And both the fandom, I'll actually kind of use the same terminology, macro level, micro level. The macro level being the greater fandom and the micro level kind of being our own expectations and thoughts and feelings towards Star Wars. When a Marvel movie comes out, it gets a lot of accolades. There's a lot of people talking about it. But for a short amount of time, and generally not as in-depth. They're not picking apart. And I know there are bloggers and podcasters and such out there that will go to a lot of granular detail like we do at Star Wars Films. But it seems that the Star Wars fandom is more prone to get into that granular detail and be picking these things apart. And, you know, we're still talking about The Force Awakens now, even though it came out 3 months ago, or not The Force Awakens, Last Jedi, even though it came out 3 months ago. For as big a film as, say, Black Panther is going to be, I don't think people are going to be dissecting that film 3 months after. I think that we kind of set ourselves up for a feeling of, I won't call it oversaturation, but almost overwhelmed, because we dwell on, and I don't mean that to sound negatively, we dwell on all things Star Wars for so long. So it is, we're constantly in the weeds of it and analyzing it, and we are consumed by it. And then before we know it, there's another one, another film that comes out, and but we didn't finish talking about the one that came out 6 months ago. And now there's a new one. And this is, now my mind is blown because I can't keep up with this. And yeah. I think the fandom kind of does that to itself. And I think that's why we don't quite feel the saturation issue with the MCU, but so many people are cautious about this with Star Wars.
Here's another thing you mentioned about how we respond to the films. Looking back at The Last Jedi, we talked about, and by we, I mean the larger community, we talked about whether or not Luke's character in this movie was consistent with who Luke really is.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about whether or not we were going to find out who Rey's parents really were. We talked about Snoke and his origins and where was he during the events of everything that had happened before. We talked about Leia's use of Force powers.
Uh-huh.
We talked about the whole chase getting away from Starkiller Base. We talked about a lot of different things, and nearly every single one of those things. We talked about Yoda appearing as a Force ghost, and now he's interacting with physical environments instead of just being a ghost. Mm-hmm. These are all things that are tied to movies other than what we just saw. These are things
yeah.
from Episode 7 or from Empire Strikes Back,
yeah,
or
sure.
from mm-hmm. whatever. These we're comparing The Last Jedi in the context of everything that's come before.
Yeah.
We didn't do that with, I'll keep using Doctor Strange as an example, or Ant-Man.
That's only an example of something bad.
and picking the Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, we weren't comparing Guardians of the Galaxy with, you know, okay, well, Drax just threw a knife, but that's not how Captain America would have thrown his shield. Well, no, because they got nothing to do with each other.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But they will when Infinity War happens. But like in that movie, you're not comparing it to events of eight other films. And I think that's got to be part of this almost exhaustion that, Tim, you were talking about. We just got done talking about The Last Jedi, and now Han Solo is coming out. And when we get to Han Solo, what have we been talking about so far with Han Solo? The Millennium Falcon looks different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been talking a lot about that. The guy playing Han Solo doesn't look like the guy who used to play Han Solo. Chewbacca has two bandoliers. Why does he need two bandoliers? Was one bandolier not good enough? Maybe he should have shopped at a better bandolier store. We have to take everything and compare it to everything that's come before. And I think that generates some exhaustion.
Yeah.
We don't have that with the MCU. We get twice as many MCU movies each year than we do Star Wars. And yet, again, 10 years and we're still not really seriously talking about oversaturation with Marvel. And yet we're in a near panic right now about that topic in Star Wars. And I got to think that part of that is, again, the fact that these are not movies that exist in microcosms that are character-centric, mm-hmm. like what we have in Marvel. And that we're comparing them to everything that has come before, even Rogue One, which everybody seemed to really like.
Yeah.
That seems to be one of the most universally well-liked Star Wars movies. Does that Star Destroyer look a lot whiter than the others? Didn't the others look kind of gray and this one's white? Oh, well, it's closer to the sun or whatever, and it's just the reflection of lighting. Oh, okay. Like even little nuances like that Pablo had to get on Twitter and explain to people. Again, a comparison to a different Star Wars film.
It's I think that, you know, obviously Lucasfilm needs to structure things the right way. So there is a fair amount of variety, and certain things will have a standaloneness to them that people mm-hmm. don't necessarily have to have watched everything else. I think the fandom has to own, stop doing what they're doing and being crazy and overly analytical about things. I think that individual fans need to accept the fact that they don't have to consume everything that has the Star Wars logo on it, and yeah. Be okay with that. Be okay with the fact that, hey, you know what? That particular show or that particular movie series, I really don't like. So one, I'm not going to continuously bash it all the time. And two, I'm going to be okay with not liking it, and I'm going to focus on the things I do like and enjoy those.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know. I think those are the things that will keep us as individuals from feeling overwhelmed or feeling that there's an oversaturation to it.
I think that's a way in which the Old Republic idea and the speculation that might be what Benioff and Wise are going to be doing. I think that's why that's such a good idea. It has nothing to do with the other films. I mean, tangentially, maybe, you know, concepts of Force users and lightsabers and whatever.
Sure.
But otherwise.
But story-wise, yeah, it doesn't have any universe, impact.
Right. Right. And I think that that could be a big benefit in preventing oversaturation. I think the more that they keep going back to the classic era, I think we're going to run into problems. And that's why I'm a little weary about Kenobi. I still think that conceptually Boba Fett could be really good, or something bounty hunter related. But again, because it could truly be an entirely standalone film. No Force users, no Jedi, no Skywalkers.
Yeah.
But I think that the more they hang on to this kind of classic trilogy era, you know, Rogue One, Han Solo, they're not getting into new enough areas for people to be able to separate those from the other films to prevent some of the oversaturation.
I don't think it's oversaturation when you talk about the original stuff there. It's like you were saying before, it's just the fact that you can't please the fans. And the more you get away from the stuff that they don't have any ties to or any ownership of, or, you know, supposed ownership of, they don't care as, I shouldn't say they don't care as much. They don't have as many things to be critical over.
They're not as hyper defensive about.
Yeah. Good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why, I mean, honestly, that's why I wish we were seeing more content coming out between episode 6 and 7. Nobody really has a sense of ownership of that. We all have, I mean, I'll admit it. I have kind of a sense of ownership about the Millennium Falcon and this new look in the Solo movie. And I'm trying to remain open-minded about it. And I think I'm succeeding, but it's still a conscious effort.
Sure.
If we had something between 6 and 7, especially if weren't directly tied to a Skywalker, though, I think that
Between 6 and 7, you're still going to have people that are, well, no, that shouldn't happen that way because this is what happened. You know, it's just, there's still all that baggage with the EU and the stories we have in our heads and in the headcanon we all have.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So maybe we need to get baggage with that.
Yeah, I agree. So maybe we need to get away or further in the history.
Well, and I think that that's why, I mean, all joking about Thrawn aside, that's why I think the Rian Johnson trilogy, if it were going to get into the outer regions, I think would be a really good idea. Yep. And I think that if that's where Lucasfilm is going with that, I think it's very smart that they've been foreshadowing that in the novels, because that gives them an arena in which they can play. That gives them a sandbox that nobody has really set foot in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's no sense of the fans picking up their toys and going home. And so Old Republic, Outer... Yeah.
No one was ever joking about Thrawn. We're completely serious about
Tim,
the Thrawn thing.
Everybody but you has been joking about the Thrawn trilogy. Okay, maybe not me.
I don't think so.
You might want to double check Discord. Or rather, you might not want to. But I think that if you can get into some of the larger area of Star Wars and stop treading in the same backyard over and over again, I think that that's going to be a benefit. And I think that might prevent the concerns about oversaturation.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this or comparisons between Star Wars and what they've done with Marvel?
I just think people need to calm down. Seriously. It's people are treating this like it's going to be a cataclysmic event. Calm down and enjoy what's out there. And if you don't, that's okay.
I'm going to take a different angle on that though. And trust me, I'm with you on the fact that people need to calm down and chill so much. But on the topic of oversaturation, I can understand the concern. I can understand where people are coming from. As a Star Wars fan, I don't want the semi fans out there. I don't like using different tiers of fandom, but the mainstream audience, the more casual fans, I don't want them getting turned off to Star Wars just based on the fact that there's so much of it and they can't seem to get away from it. Mm-hmm. Oversaturation is a thing. The question is, have we hit it? And I don't think we've hit it yet, but the question is, are we about to? And I'm hoping the answer is no, but it's a valid concern. And I think that people who are looking at it aren't being overreactionary for once. I mean, oh my gosh, everything is overreacted to, but I think that this is something that warrants some looking at.
Right. But I mean, look at it this way too, though. I mean, with the fans looking at this kind of stuff and oversaturation, having, like we were saying, we're just talking about this one. We just got done talking about the last one.
Right.
That's us. I mean, we're doing a show about this. There's fans that listen to us that are as into this as we are, that are in, you know, and it feels like it's kind of, we're always talking about something about Star Wars now. And the rest of the world isn't. I mean, it's not like, you know, the person who is like you said, Eric, you don't want to segregate fans, but, you know, casual fans that enjoy Star Wars, that want to go see the movie, they're not spending their evenings talking with people online about what's going to happen with this, you know, new Falcon and why is that, you know, I don't think it's as pressing to them. And as long as they're still engaged to come see the next movie, it's a good thing, right? I mean,
well, and that's the hope though, is that they'll stay just as engaged and that it won't hit them that way. I mean, you could argue that people like us, we should be happy with 8 or 9 Star Wars movies a year, but there are a lot of fans out there who think you can't get oversaturated on Star Wars. And I understand that. I'm not sure that it would bug me if we got a lot of Star Wars movies, but I guess my concern isn't so much for us. Heck, it would make our show notes a lot easier.
But, you know, even for us, I mean, I don't know if I want 8 Star Wars movies a year. I mean,
well, yeah, that's excessive.
I love lobster. I don't want it every night for dinner.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of thing. You need a mix. You need the other stuff out there. But if we got, I mean, we're getting 3 Marvel movies this year. And yes, Tim, Ant-Man is one of the movies coming out. you know, would I like 3 Star Wars movies? Sure.
Right. But I don't think for us it matters, ironically, because we'll be the most vocal discussions on Twitter, we the community. But I really think it's more about the mainstream audience, really. But
yeah,
I don't know. You know, we had Kyle Newman on the Forcecast a while back, and he was saying there is no such thing as oversaturation of Star Wars. And I, you know, even when we had him on that episode, I remember kind of being like, well, I mean, I see where you're coming from, but like other people who aren't as into it as we are, like, and he adamantly defended his point. Kyle said, no, there's just, it is not a thing. It does not exist. I would be really curious as to what he thinks. I mean, he's so much of a fan and he loves it so much. I'm sure he would say no, but like, I want to see what the playing field looks like after we know what's going on with Rian Johnson's stuff, Benioff and Wise's stuff. And once we actually see the playing field, see how many football players are on the rink at the field. It's a field, right? Diamond. When we see all the players on the sporting event area, I'm going to get a sports analogy here at some point, correct someday.
Probably not.
But that's what I want to know. When we get a schedule, when we get a lineup, that's going to be when we're going to be able to sit down and say, okay, this is good. This is a good pace for things. Or we're going to say, oh my gosh, we're going to be like, you're never going to be able to walk into a Walmart anymore without them having like a dedicated Star Wars section of a Walmart store, because there's just always going to be new stuff coming out that's going to be, you know, big cardboard cutouts everywhere.
There will
everywhere.
Still be like 20 Zuvios swinging on the
Zuvios, thing. Yes. Characters who don't even appear in the films. Yeah. All right. I think that's about going to do it for the discussion, unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
No,
I think I'm good.
I've said right. my piece.
Well, I've got a couple of pieces of trivia here. This comes from a new series, relatively new series. It's been out for a few weeks now on Netflix, called The Toys That Made Us. They've got, I think, 4 episodes so far. There's some more coming. They've got an episode on G.I. Joe, Barbie, He-Man, and Star Wars. And they're about an hour long a piece, and they talk about how these toy concepts came about. And they're talking about, you know, George Lucas shopping around the idea for toys based on the film, which wasn't really a thing. There was no VCRs back then. You had a theatrical run, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was a really successful movie, which Star Wars, of course, would not have been, you might get a re-release in the theaters years later. They don't do toys based on movies. And he shopped it around, and toy companies kept saying, no, 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 no. And then he hit Kenner. And so this is the whole backstory and the development of the toys and stuff like that. It's fascinating. Again, it's on Netflix. You probably have a subscription already, so you should go check it out. But I picked up a couple of quick pieces of trivia. So some people will probably remember that they didn't have the licensing set up and the production set up in time for the holiday season in 1977. So there was that card that you could get from places like Sears and wherever that promised you the collection of all the action figures. And so all these kids, if they got this cardboard ad, basically, for Christmas, they were all excited. Right? Do you guys mm-hmm. remember that story?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Millennium Falcon toy, in relation to when the movies came out, when did the Millennium Falcon toy get released?
Oh.
Ballpark.
In you look like a month and a year?
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be a month. Just kind of a ballpark.
In
relation to the films.
I'll go as far as, I'll say 80. I'll say 1980. I'll say it came late.
Lou?
I was thinking the same thing. I'll go 79. I'll go a year earlier.
Okay. Well, Tim is closer than Lou. It was around the time of Empire Strikes Back. It was actually part of the Empire Strikes Back toy line.
Mm, okay.
Really?
Yeah. Any guesses how much it cost, approximately?
Oof. How big was it?
1980.
Are you talking playset?
The Millennium Falcon vehicle.
Okay.
The toy vehicle. You know, it had the top part where you could pull it off, and there was like the cargo area with the holochest table.
Yeah.
You had the little gunner seat for the quad cannon.
1999.
I'll go to 39.
Lou got you on this one. 2477.
Wow.
Because that 77 is. All right. Last thing from the A New Hope toy line. I think this was pretty much through Kenner's entire toy run. It wasn't until later when Hasbro took it over. And even then, not for a really, really long time, did we see these three characters from A New Hope that were actually pretty prominent characters in the movie. Name three prominent characters from A New Hope that did not have action figures.
Really?
I'll say, and we're just going with Kenner. We're not going with Hasbro, right?
Even the early Hasbro stuff, I don't think these were released. It wasn't until they kind of gave up on a lot of the more mainstream stuff and started moving into the more fringe, like, oh, hey, we forgot about this guy. And even the Power of the Force line, I don't think it was in that. I think these came out after that. But I am not positive, so we'll at least say Kenner. We will say all the way through, at least into the 90s, wow, these characters were not released.
I'll say Leia. Obi-Wan. Really? And
wait. To be clear, these were characters who did not have any action figures until at least the 90s.
Yeah. No, there was an early Leia. There was a Leia.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah. I was just saying,
and Leia was an early Obi-Wan 90s, too.
But no.
And in fact, that card that you got for Christmas with the initial lineup, Leia and Obi-Wan were both in that lineup.
Okay.
They were the first characters.
So prominent characters from the original trilogy that did not have an action figure made until the 90s.
Yep.
Oof.
Maybe later. Again, I'd have to look up the dates. But
from the trilogy?
These are not characters like in the back of the cantina. Okay. These are characters who were named in the film. Verbally, like, had names in the film.
So we're not talking the original trilogy. We're talking Star Wars. We're talking A New Hope. Okay.
We're talking A New Hope.
Oh boy.
You want hints?
Let's see. Yeah, I'll take a hint.
Well, I mean, so they were only in A New Hope.
Only in A New Hope.
Only in a new hope.
What?
They were not in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
Let's see.
Owen and Beru?
Very good. Yes, there were no characters for Owen and Beru. And there's one more that was even more prominent a character.
See, I wouldn't consider them prominent. That's why I'm kind of stuck.
They had a decent amount of screen time. They were both named in the movie. They had a lot of dialogue at the beginning. You give up?
Tarkin?
Tarkin. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Tarkin did not have an action figure.
Yeah. I mean, it was a pure guess. I'm just thinking, who's going to want a Tarkin figure when you're a kid? Hey, I want to play the old guy.
He was as much a bad guy as Vader. I mean, he was bossing Vader around.
He was.
It's a significant guy there. A couple of other little things, fun facts, if you will. The Gamorrean Guard that was released for Return of the Jedi was repurposed in the 90s as Friar Tuck.
Yes.
Or the Prince of Thieves movie.
Yep.
The Ewok village was repurposed for Prince of Thieves.
Yep. I remember hearing that.
And there was a battle wagon. I think it was an Ewok battle wagon that was also repurposed for Prince of Thieves.
Yep.
So they actually took some of the molds and redid them. That was actually how they created a lot of the prototypes for the early figures too, is they would take sculpts from other brands, other franchises, and kind of like mold putty on them or carve them down into different things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. A really good series on Netflix.
It is.
If you're at all into collectibles, I highly recommend you check it out. The Toys That Made Us. They've got an entire episode.
It's on my list. I have not seen it yet, but
yeah, I've seen a couple episodes of it. It is very good. They really dive into some neat stuff, and there's some cool facts in there.
All right, we've got a piece of feedback. This one's from Eddie T. Someone want to read it?
Lou?
Sure. Eddie T. says, Dear Eric, Lou, and Tim, greetings from Forest Hill, London. I think the majority of Star Wars fans have come to terms, whether they like it or not, that Rey is not related to a Skywalker. Personally, I would have liked to have been, I'd like her to have been linked in some way. I don't believe it would have been taken right away from anyone in the galaxy can, you know, come from nothing and be great angle. So, that definitely does strike good with me there. But however, he says, I'm on board that she is not linked, but I struggle with this. The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. You have the power too. Why does Luke refer to his family in the teaser trailer? Does this not imply that he's addressing another family member, stating that they have that power too? The Force Awakens is someone. Oh, sorry. The Force is awakening in someone. Now, this is just a deliberate, callous misdirection. Or something JJ has something quite different in mind than Ryan did. please help.
Yeah,
Dr.
So
Eddie T.
That's a good question.
It's interesting. So Eddie and I actually had a little bit of dialogue with this, and I had to go back to the Force Awakens trailers to hear exactly what the line was and pretty much what he has here in the email. The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. And you have that power too. That is a line. So that was in a Force Awakens trailer. Line never mm-hmm. appeared in the Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So, you know, my potential thoughts here, either potentially Lucas speaking to Ben / Kylo, Lucas speaking to Rey, and she actually is a Skywalker. Obviously, since it didn't appear in the film, it could be misdirection. And we know that we've seen some misdirection in trailers for the last couple of movies. It could have been a bad trailer cut. Or the scene itself was actually cut from the film. And some of those obviously have a little bit of overlap in them. But it's just so interesting that this line was not from The Last Jedi. And we could kind of tie this to The Last Jedi, but it does come from a Force Awakens trailer. It never was included in The Force Awakens. I'm stumped. I'm totally stumped. I don't know what this was or why it was.
I think that the purpose of the line, most of the quote is quoting Luke from Return of the Jedi.
True.
On Endor when he's talking to Leia.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. the intention, and you're right, Eddie, it does imply that Rey is related.
If he was speaking to Rey.
Whether it was intended to imply that or not, it is, we are all going to infer, I should say, that it indicates that Rey is related, because it seems to be a direct implication that she is. I think rather what the intention was to tie the teaser back to Return of the Jedi. They wanted people to get the idea
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. the Force, the Jedi are continuing beyond just Luke, that this is a continuation of Return of the Jedi. So they wanted to establish for the mainstream audience, it is a sequel.
Yeah. Continuity.
It is taking place long in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a new Jedi character, a new Force user character who's going to appear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about Luke. It's about whoever this And You Have It Too is. A lot of times when they do trailers, and we've seen this before in other things, we see shots that are not in the films, like with Rogue One.
Yep.
Right.
Well, we get the Rogue One trailers were just like non-existent yeah. in
wow.
the film.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah,
they also do the thing where they take dialogue and they put it over parts of the movie and scenes from the movie that don't have anything to do with that quote.
Yeah. And we see now more and more them recording new dialogue to mm-hmm. kind of almost narrate, right. if not details of the teaser then or a trailer, then the tone of a trailer. And I think that's what we saw here. This was just voiceover narration for the trailer. I don't think that it was... In hindsight, I think it's unfortunate that they did it this way because yeah. it was confusing to people. But I don't think the intention was ever that this was supposed to have been lines from the movie. I think it was supposed to be this is kind of bridging that gap from Return of the Jedi to the last or to The Force Awakens.
The tough thing is that a lot of these trailers are created before the final cuts of the film right. are done. And I think that was definitely in the case of Rogue One. I'm pretty confident that that's what the issue was that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've said as much.
Yeah. So, you know, they created these trailers, a lot of those lines, which is crazy because those lines of dialogue that we saw in the trailer, they were almost iconic to the movie before we even saw the movie. You know,
right. I mean, how many t-shirts did people make up that saying I rebel?
Yeah. I mean, they defined the movie for us before it was ever released. And then, so it was just crazy that they dropped those lines. It just blows my mind.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a big thing that we fall victim to, but yeah, there is also kind of that measure of trailer manipulation, I think, where for whatever reason they are inserting dialogue or changing, you know, dialogue in over scenes that in the movie they don't match up and that kind of stuff.
You know, and look at it this way too, because this was dialogue that was, you know, basically a voiceover of some other video. If that line was in the movie originally and got cut or changed for some reason, the way he says that depends on who he's talking to and how he's saying it. If it's, you know, if it's meant to say like, you know, look, hey, I know the Force. My family is strong in the Force. You know, all these people have it and you have it too. That's not saying that I'm talking to somebody who is part of my family. I mean, I can see where you get that from the line, but you could construct that in a way, depending on who you're talking to. Look,
that it's,
you
know, additional to the family.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I know the Force. I know this stuff. And, right. And you were in the Force too. So
That's a good point too.
But either way, it's just, it's wrong when you get this kind of stuff that's not in the movie that you're like, where was that? Right.
But it's, again, though, it's also a teaser. So, and I can't, people get really confused about the difference between a teaser and a trailer. And the easy answer to that is the length, but it's not just about the length. Trailers are generally around 2.5 to 3.5 minutes. Teasers are normally around 90 seconds, but it's more than that. Teasers are generally a montage of imagery. A lot of times some text titles show up.
Yeah.
Coming this summer, blah, blah, blah. Or you get that narration voiceover.
In a world.
In a world. Yeah. It's not until you get the full trailer that it lays out the story. So the trailer lays out what the movie's about. The teaser shows you glimpses of the movie. And think back in the 80s. And a lot of people forget this, and it's mind-blowing now to go back and look at 80s movies and see the trailers, but they were narrated like throughout the entire you'd have a guy doing a voiceover for a trailer that would narrate the entire trailer. You'd have 3.5 minutes of someone talking over top of scenes from the movie, and the only time he'd shut up would be when there's dialogue.
Right.
So it's not unprecedented. It's just unusual for today, and we're not used to it anymore. But I think that because it was a teaser, I think that's where they decided it would be okay. And again, in hindsight, I think it was more confusing than anything else. I think it did more harm than good in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Good question, though.
Yeah, it was a good question.
Yeah, it really is. And it's an interesting reflection that while it had to do with The Force Awakens, we also have some association to The Last Jedi with it. For some of our speculation, and we really can't solve it. So,
yeah.
Thanks,
and
Eddie.
Like I said, we're starting to see it in other trailers. I mean, the Deadpool trailer recently with him with the action figures. I don't know if that's in the movie, or where he had the little action figures.
Oh, I would say that's not in the movie. I think that's
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I would say that was constructed solely for the trailer.
Why would you? Tim doesn't get that I'm trolling him.
Oh.
That's really sad. Tim, I expected better from you.
Sorry. You know, I'm not completely with it tonight. So, you know.
That's okay. I think on that note, we'll probably wrap it up.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody has any questions like that for us that we'd like to dive into, please send us an email. Best way to get a hold of the three of us is sending an email to echobase@randomchatter.com. That goes to all three of us, as I said. And if we get some good ones, we'll try to read them on the air.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You can find all of our stuff online at various different places. Facebook.com/Random Chatter Network is our Facebook account. Random Chatter is our main Twitter account for the entire network. And for this show, and generally for the Star Wars related stuff, you want to follow Echo Base Podcast on Twitter. And as for us, you can find me on Twitter at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Lou, where can we find you?
Just my name, Lou Secchi, LOUSECKI.
And Tim?
That's Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two Lou Secchis.
All right. Tim with two Lou Secchis.
Tim with two
Oh, boy.
We now are also on Instagram. Thank you very much, Lou. Because I don't know that I would be able to navigate that. But you've got that set up for us. Good job.
I do. Random. You can find us at Outer Rim Network. For this show, and you can also find Random Chatter as well.
Yeah. Now, I guess that's a little bit of a spoiler, too. We haven't really talked about this, I don't think, but we are going to have kind of a sub network of Star Wars shows on Random Chatter. We're going to have more details on it later, but if, for the people who just want the Star Wars content, not the rest of the stuff, you're going to be able to subscribe to a network feed that is just for the Star Wars stuff. And also when we do conventions like Celebration and such, we're going to have kind of a sub branding that's Star Wars specific. Mm-hmm. We already had the Outer Rim Network set up, and so we decided to continue with that. So we're bringing back the Outer Rim Network as our sub branding for Star Wars related podcasts.
Did I just spoil that? Was that my fault?
You did just spoil it. That's the first announcement. That's all right. I mean,
we can cut that out.
What do you guys think?
Nah, leave it.
Leave it in. Okay, yeah.
It's a network within a network.
The Instagram's out there. We got followers already. Yeah. So yeah,
the Instagram account is there. You don't have to change anything with your podcast feeds or anything like that. Everything is still all the same.
No changes. So like I said, it hasn't really launched yet. This is kind of, you guys are getting some behind the scenes info here. When it launches, we'll have more information for you. You're not going to have to change anything you're doing right now. You will have the option to change things if you want to. We'll get to that later on. We do not plan to bring back the Outer Rim show. This is going to be a branding of the network. Mm-hmm. For the Outer Rim. So more on that later. And then finally, you can find all of our content at randomchatter.com. So be sure to check that out.
Please be sure to spread the word and help support us. Leaving reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast from is a great way to do it. You know, you guys know the drill. Click on all the stars, write in some great stuff about the podcast. Let people know why you like us. That's fundamentally just it. You know, it could be a couple of sentences. It could be half a novel. Either way,
that's starting to sound like my dates. I go out on dates. Like, tell me why you like me. Only I don't really ever get an answer. So I'm hoping this goes better.
That's right. Also, be sure to tell your friends about us. Tell your coworkers about us. Family members, whoever it is that you know who is into Star Wars. You get into a conversation with them about it, talk to them about podcasts, tell them what you listen to, ask what they listen to. Please be sure to mention us and kind of give us a little bit of an endorsement. Word of mouth is a huge thing. And we talk about the reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. And while that's important, I think we actually probably gain the most amount of listeners simply by word of mouth. And that's just people.
We rely on that.
Oh, yeah.
We rely on it hard.
Yeah. People just directly telling people, you know, we all know someone who is interested in the same types of things that we are. And when you communicate out some of those details about your fandom and what the things that help drive and promote your interest, that's really what does it. Supporting us on Patreon is also a great way to help support us and help us grow. We mentioned this up and coming network within a network. And obviously, I think a lot of our listeners over the last few months have seen a lot of changes and growth and some new shows and new and different things that we've been doing. And a lot of that is because of the financial support that a lot of our listeners have been throwing at us. The way to do that is through Patreon. You can get the details at randomchatter.com/Patreon. And when you go to that site, you'll see the different contribution levels, and you will see that with every contribution level, we are also giving back to you. The most basic contribution level is $1 a month. And with that, you get full access to a lot of people. You know, we've been talking about Slack for like a year and a half now. We've moved mm-hmm. everything over to Discord. Fundamentally, the same thing. They're online communities, basically chat rooms. But Discord, the reason why we moved over to Discord is because Discord offers us some additional options and opportunities, and it has some better integration with Patreon. It also has some integration with Twitch, which has been largely used as a gaming platform. But we have some possibility in the future of using that to do maybe some live streaming of our podcasts. Eric and Lou used to do some of this not too mm-hmm. long ago, but before I had joined up. And so we've been talking a little bit more about doing some of that again. So that could kind of be fun. And just a lot of different opportunities. So When you go to randomchatter.com/Patreon, you'll see those things in there. You'll see what we provide to you. Again, that dollar a month gets you into Discord with a lot of access to a lot of different rooms. And the rooms in there, you can talk, you know, there's rooms for different shows. There's rooms for different topics, whatever your interest might be. It could be food or pets or Star Wars or books or Star Trek or The Walking Dead or whatever. So you're interacting with, no, there's not an Ant-Man room. Don't do it. I will delete it.
Let me think.
I will go for the nuclear option. So you can join us in there and have a lot of discussion with hosts and other fans, and it's a great time. The cool thing is that in going over to Discord, to be kind of in, there's a public lobby for Discord. And if you want to just kind of see what it's all about without making that commitment to a financial contribution, you can head over to randomchatter.com/Discord and typing in some information there. That will get you into our public lobby, and you'll still get to do a lot of interaction. You just don't have access to a lot of the other rooms. But give it a try, see how it looks. We've actually had a good handful of folks join us just in the last week, and they've gotten a good feel for it, and a lot of, you know, really good positive feedback on Discord and what we're doing there. And of course, you can contribute more than that dollar a month, and that gets you other perks. Again, randomchatter.com/Patreon. Please check it out. And thank you for your support.
I want to say a little bit more about that, since we're kind of on the topic of some of the changes. And I know we're running a little bit long here, but I think some of this is kind of important. First of all, I want to say that we had a lot of changes on the network over the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, a little bit longer. And one of our primary goals was to start focusing on what it is that's important for us for the shows, content-wise, and making sure that we were delivering those shows on a regular basis. And it got from the point where we were sometimes a few weeks late with getting shows out to now, you know, I plan to get a show released on a Tuesday, and sometimes I don't get it released until Wednesday instead. You know, that's it. Like, maybe it's delayed a day or so. So we wanted to get that regularity, that consistency with show releases and build some stability into the network. We've achieved that so far. And then we moved on to phase two. And that was kind of looking at going over what it is we're giving back to the people who donate through Patreon. We've revamped some of the perk levels, and we have been delivering. We've gone back to doing bonus content. This wasn't really a perk. This is just kind of something I felt like throwing in there just to kind of make up for the loss of things for people over, you know, the time when we weren't doing stuff. I've been doing an audio blog, just kind of a, hey, how's it going today? Here's some random thoughts. And so we've been posting those on the Patreon site, and you can get all those audio posts through an RSS feed. You can put that in your podcast player, by the way. The Discord move was a big deal. And like you said, Tim, we opened up kind of a main lobby channel where people can go in. They don't have access to all the channels, but everybody can go in there. You don't have to be a donor. You can go in there right now, randomchatter.com/Discord, and join and hang out with us in the main lobby. There's a lot of activity there. Yeah. I got to say, I was a little worried when we moved over to Discord that we'd have all these channels again and there wouldn't be a lot of conversation. And I was wrong. It's been really active, even in the first 24 hours. And we're days later and it's still active. And we've thrown in a couple of bots to automate some stuff. We've got some of the old Infocom games like Zork and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. we got rid of one feature in one of the bots, but yeah, that's a whole nother story. But you can actually like play Zork in our Discord channel, which I think is really cool. But we're kind of dropping surprises here, like the Outer Rim Network, I'm going to drop another name that you'll see pop up on our Patreon page pretty soon here, and that is Random Chatter Theater.
Random Chatter Theater. What's that, Eric?
Random Chatter Theater. Well, stay tuned.
Come on.
Yeah.
I even like actually went with your setup, and now you just...
Yeah. I know, right?
I'm
done.
Isn't
that awesome? No, I love that. I'm trolling you so hard.
No. No.
Well, you know what? I don't want to troll our audience too hard, so I will say this. There will be an announcement very, very soon, like within a week. By the next time you're listening to another Echo Base episode, you will already know all there is you need to know about Random Chatter Theater. It's going to be another perk. It's going to be a very engaging community involvement sort of thing. So stay tuned for that. Oh, and also the music you hear in the podcast is the Imperial March by Cell Dweller and the Force Theme by Scandroid.
Nice. Now, before I sign off, I'm going to leave you guys with one last thing.
Uh-oh.
You know, just think about this. Maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe it's not. We stopped doing video podcast stuff right before Tim joined us. So just saying.
Wow.
We'll see you guys in about a week.
I'm not feeling the team bald guy unity.
I just couldn't resist ponder. That.
Huh.
Wow.
It's just a coincidence.
You know, you mentioned Twitch. And that's one more thing I wanted to say. We are going to launch on Twitch this summer. And I have been nonstop planning. Like, we are going, when we launch on Twitch, it's going to be like a big deal. I've got everything laid out. We're going to be posting to YouTube as well. The video thing, it's not going to be like, hey, can we do this? And we start. We already did all that testing stuff last year.
Right.
We've got a goal. There's planning going on behind the scenes on a regular basis. We are launching this summer period. It's not going to be all willy-nilly. It's a thing.
It's going to be fun.
There's definitive planning and preparation going on, and it's going to be awesome.
Now, do I need a green screen for it, or are we?
You would look. You would.
It's probably appreciate. A mask.
Go ahead. Say I'll look better with a green screen. Go ahead. Say it. Say it, Eric. Say those
you will
words.
Look better on. You will look better with a green screen behind
it's
you.
It's a green bag over your head.
I wasn't saying what Lou's saying. I mean, I can say that if you want.
Okay.
No, a green screen will make us look awesome.
Okay. We'd be able to do a lot more if you had a green screen behind you. But don't worry, we're going to get to the production stuff, and there's a plan.
Okay.
It's all good.
We just got to worry about where Eric puts us when we're sitting in front of a green screen.
Yes, I control the horizontal, I control the vertical. And we'll be doing community gaming night, and ooh, I'll be streaming personally
can we put
in a
Tim
channel.
In an Ant-Man movie?
We probably could.
Yes.
I know for a fact that we could, I just don't know if I could actually distribute it. Maybe we can get Lou streaming on Twitch and do a little, like in his own channel, and maybe we'll have like different channels for each of the hosts, and we'll be able to cycle them through the Random Chatter channel.
As long as you don't give the fans a chance to vote on where they want to put us, I'm good.
Because I'd be I'll think
scared
about
as
it.
To where that would happen.
All right.
Okay, guys, we are running late. I am going to end this now and put everybody out of their misery, and we'll see you guys in about a week.